Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Rashi podcast for Parashat Toldot. Visit www.webyeshiva.org for more information on our fully interactive online yeshiva. In this week's Parasha, we begin reading the story of Yaakov and Esav. And as we make our way through this very complex story, we are not sure what to make of these two individuals. When we read about Yaakov buying his brother's bechorah and stealing his brother's bracha, are we meant to think that these actions are commendable, or are we meant to condemn them? And as for Esav, is he an uncouth hunter, or is he, on the other hand, a faithful provider? The story is unclear, and many interpretations can be found within the psukim themselves. Against this tapestry of ambiguity, one reads Rashi's commentary, and his words are like a black and white portrait in contrast to what we see in the psukim. In his commentary, Yaakov is depicted clearly as innocent and pious, while Esav is painted as a conniving brute, who is worthy neither of the birthright nor of the blessing. Now, in truth, Rashi's approach is not particularly surprising, and we might say that it's even rather midrashic, right? And after all, he is quoting midrashim in his commentary, because the midrash has a tendency or an intentional agenda to portray certain characters in black and white, right? Tzadikim are tzadikim gmurim, right? Good people are completely good, and rishaim are rishaim gmurim, right? Bad people are completely bad in many midrashim. So it could be that Rashi is just simply following in this tendency that is found in certain midrashim. Rashi's approach to Esav's persona is best encapsulated by his explanation of why Yitzchak loved Esav. In Perek Kafei Pasuk Kafchet, we read, "Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav ki tzayid b'fiv, v'rivka ohevet et Yaakov." Right? Yitzchak loved Esav, the Pasuk says, ki tzayid b'fiv. The literal meaning of this pasuk, the pshat, seems to be, right, that Yitzchak loved Esav because his hunted game, meaning the food which Esav hunted, was bifiv, was in the mouth of Yitzchak, meaning that Esav hunted and he provided his father with food. And because of that, Yitzchak loved his son. And Rashi actually brings this explanation, as his first explanation in his commentary, he quotes it in the name of Unklus, who translates the pasuk in that manner. Rashi, however, brings also another interpretation. Umidrasho, defiv shel Esav, shehaya tzad oto umirmehu bidvarav. According to this second midrashic interpretation, the tzad befiv means that the hunt was in Esav's mouth. Why? Because using his mouth, right, he would hunt, he would trap and deceive Yitzchak, meaning he would deceive him with words. What this midrash is saying is that otherwise inexplicable, Yitzchak's love for Esav is the result of Esav's deception and manipulation of Yitzchak. Rashi continues to understand Yitzchak in this vein, Esav in this vein, in his interpretation of the words Yodea Tzayid in Pasuk Kafzayin. Right, these words, Yodea Tzayid, which describe Esav, right, as one who knew how to hunt, Rashi says, Latsudu l'ramot et aviv b'fiv. Right? Again, like we saw in the previous pasuk that we looked at, what does it mean that he knew how to hunt? That he knew how to hunt and to deceive his father with words. And Rashi continues, U'sho'alo abba heach me'asrin et hamelach ve'et ha'tevin. He would ask his father all sorts of intricate, supposedly genuine questions. How do you take ma'asrot from salt? How do you take ma'asrot from straw? In order to try to trick his father into thinking that he was actually very careful with doing the mitzvot. Now, this negative portrayal of Esav continues throughout Rashi's commentary on the story. When Yitzchak first begins to question the identity of the son who was standing before him, right, in the story of Yaakov stealing the bracha from Esav, right? When Yaakov, dressing up as Esav, comes before him, and Yitzchak first begins to question, is this really Esav standing before me? Rashi explains that Yaakov had evoked the name of God, which was not Esav's practice. In Perek Kamzayin, Pasuk Kaf, Yitzchak says, "Vayomer Yitzchak el beno, ma ze miharta limtzol beni?" Right? He's amazed that Esav, who he had just sent out to hunt food, has come back so quickly. Right? We all know that this is Yaakov, who came back quickly because Rivka had prepared food for him to bring. And so Yaakov answers, "Vayomer ki hikra Adonai Elohecha lefanai." Yaakov answers that he was able to hurry because, you know, Hashem basically helped him along. Yitzchak's immediate reaction is, "Vayomer Yitzchak al Yaakov, gishana va'amushcha b'ni, ha'ata ze b'ni Esav imlo." Right? Yitzchak is already beginning to suspect. So Rashi comments, "Gishana va'amushcha, amar Yitzchak b'libo, ein derech Esav liyot shem shamayim shagur b'fiv, v'ze amar ki hikra Hashem alokecha." Right? Yitzchak says to himself, this person standing before me evoked the name of God. That's not the way that Esav usually speaks. Perhaps it's not really Esav. Similarly, after Yitzchak feels Yaakov's arms and sees that they are hairy, like his son Esav, because Yaakov had dressed up like his brother, Yitzchak says the famous pasuk, "Vayomer hakol kol Yaakov v'hayadayim yidei Esav." The voice is the voice of Yaakov, but the arms are the arms of Esav. Rashi interprets the words "kol Yaakov" not in the sense of the tone of the sound of his voice, right, as most people usually understand it, but rather more the manner in which he spoke. Shemidaber b'lashon tachanunim, right, that he spoke in a beseeching tone, right, when he speaks to his father in pasuk Yutet, he says "kumna," please arise, as opposed to what Esav himself actually says later, "yakum avi," father, arise, get up, which is a much more brusque tone. So again, here, Rashi is claiming that Yitzchak identified or began to suspect that the person standing in front of him was Yaakov and not Esav, because the person spoke in a nice tone, which was Yaakov's manner of speaking, as opposed to a not nice tone, which was Esav's manner of speaking. And finally, if we go back to Rashi's comment on Pasuk Gimel, where Yaakov is giving his instructions to Esav what he should bring to him, Rashi reads into the words in Yitzchak's instructions all sorts of warnings to Esav that he should not bring to Yitzchak food that was either improperly slaughtered or food that was stolen. So again, we see that Rashi is implying here that Yitzchak feared that Esav would bring him food that was either improperly slaughtered or stolen. Again, a negative reading of the character of Esav. So what we see throughout Rashi's commentary is a consistent interpretation of the character of Esav in an unfavorable light. He, throughout the story, interprets Yitzchak's thoughts in the story as an unfavorable portrayal of Esav. Now, whether one sees this as the pshat or not, right? Whether we agree with what Rashi is saying here about the character of Esav, what seems to be going on is that Rashi is interpreting this character in a certain way, and he's being consistent about it, right? For whatever reason, whether he sees it as the simple meaning of the pasuk, or whether he feels compelled to interpret the pasuk this way for other reasons, he's being consistent, and he's consistently showing how we could read the psukim as showing Esav as a negative character. If you look at the commentary of the Maharal on Rashi's commentary, which is found in the Maharal's work, the Gurayeh, the Maharal very cleverly reveals a crack in Rashi's clear-cut rendering of the character of Esav. Throughout his explanation of Rashi, the Maharal explains that all of Yitzchak's comments were actually meant to praise Esav. For example, when Rashi notes that Yitzchak thought that Yaakov was standing in front of him because Esav was not in the habit of evoking God's name, בפיו של עשיו. The Maharal explains, Shehaya Esav nizhar shelo lehazkir shem shemaim. Right, that why according to Rashi, or meaning according to Rashi, according to Yitzchak, did Esav not evoke God's name? Because he was very careful not to utter the name of God, right, which after all is something which we are not meant to do without very careful consideration. So it is not that Esav was not using God's name out of disrespect for God, just the opposite, right? Esav didn't use God's name out of respect for God, right? That is the way that the Maharal understands how Rashi is understanding Yitzchak's thoughts. So, according to Yitzchak, according to this interpretation, right, Yitzchak thinks that the person in front of him can't be Esav because this person is not being careful the way that Esav would be careful in using the name of God, or not using the name of God. And the Maharal explains the commentary of Rashi in this manner throughout the parasha. Yitzchak, the Maharal explains, had to make sure to warn Esav not to bring stolen or improperly slaughtered meat because he thought that Esav might think that honoring one's parents overrides the prohibition of improperly slaughtered or stolen meat. So great was Esav's kibud av, right? Kibud av ve'im, something which we actually see somewhat in the psukim of the story, that he might have misunderstood certain halachot that they are not overridden by the commandment to respect one's parents. Finally, Esav's commanding tone when he says to his father Yakum Avi, as opposed to Yaakov's more gentle tone, the Maharal explains that Yitzchak thought, well, that this is a proper way, the proper commanding tone of the voice of a future leader. Right, the future leader that Yitzchak, his father, hoped Esav would one day be. Now, this interpretation of the Maharals might seem strange until, if one reads the Maharal inside, I haven't been reading the Maharal, in its complete form. The Maharal explains throughout the commentary why he is saying this. His curious interpretation of Rashi's words is elucidated when one realizes that what he is saying is that from Yitzchak's perspective, as we know from the Psukim, Esav was an upright individual. So it would only make sense, the Maharal is explaining, that Yitzchak would evaluate whether or not Esav stood before him according to how he perceives Esav. Right? If Yitzchak loved his son because he was a good person, we assume, then clearly, however we understand Yitzchak's thoughts, however it was that Rashi understood Yitzchak's thoughts, has to take into account Yitzchak's perspective on Esav, not our own. Thus, Rashi, who believed that Esav had completely deceived his father, right, we saw that Rashi sees this in the words kitzayid b'fiv, right, according to Rashi, Yitzchak was completely duped by his older son, then his thoughts must be understood as perceiving Esav in a positive light, because if Yitzchak didn't perceive Esav in a positive light throughout the story, well then, Esav didn't really completely fool his father, right? So this commentary of the Maharal on Rashi's commentary, right, completely turns Rashi on his head, right? Or I should say Rashi's commentary on his head, right? It gives us a completely different way of understanding what Rashi says, because without understanding Rashi in this way, the Rashi seems to be inconsistent, right? How could it be that Esav completely tricked his father, and yet Yitzchak saw him negatively? Now, it's not clear to me that Rashi's explanation was Rashi's true intention. I mean, Rashi certainly doesn't seem to be praising Esav. But the Maharal's comments, if nothing else, force us to reevaluate what Rashi really meant. They force us to go back to Rashi and say, wait, maybe Rashi isn't quite as simple as we thought. Perhaps Rashi was trying to hint that Yitzchak was not as blind as we might have thought. That he really saw Esav as not a perfect individual. And if that is the case, is perhaps Rashi suggesting that Yitzchak loved his son, despite the fact that he wasn't a tzaddik gamur? But on the other hand, if Yitzchak was not completely deceived by Esav, then perhaps Esav was not quite as devious as Rashi initially asserted. Alternatively, another possible way of looking at it is that maybe Yitzchak had been tricked, right? Maybe initially Yitzchak had been tricked by his son's behavior, but somehow in the process of evaluating his sons as they stood before his sightless eyes, he suddenly, with a kind of inner vision, saw things in a different light. Or perhaps the Maharal is right. Perhaps we just simply didn't understand Rashi the first time. This exercise in understanding Rashi, which the Maharal forces us to undertake, teaches us a very important lesson. First of all, it teaches us that regardless of what we might think the Pshat is, it's very important to read the Rashi according to what Rashi thought, or what Rashi may have been trying to explain. We might have certain feelings about Yaakov and Esav in the story and what the Pshat is actually saying. But when you're looking at Rashi, look at Rashi, right? Try to understand Rashi as Rashi through what Rashi was trying to say, how he was trying to understand and interpret the Psukim. And even more from this exercise that we just undertook, I think we learn from the Maharal that even a seemingly unambiguous Rashi, a Rashi which seems in some ways to be very simplistic or very black and white, always deserves a second look, right? An interpretation is not always as simple as it seems. And very often reading a commentary carefully forces us to realize that the commentary is more complicated than we thought, and the psukim which the story is trying to interpret is more complicated than we thought. And in the end, what seems like a very black and white interpretation of our parasha's characters might not be so black and white after all. Shabbat shalom u'mivarach.